previous offenses and protect him from committing further offenses. The next verse says, Kirtaniya Sada Harihi. This is anticipating somewhat the next verse. One should be eager to chant constantly, continuously. But he says with an anguished heart that one should feel anguish about this condition of nam aparad, and full of contrition, that I should be contrite, repentant. This is the mood. This is the emotional context here of chanting the holy names properly. Because when one begins to try to become free from offenses, therefore is on the clearing stage, then this nam abhasa occurs. You know this word abhasa? Everybody have it down? The literal meaning of the word abhasa seems to be somehow or other the projection of light into a distance or into darkness. So sometimes abhasa refers to a reflection, or a ray of light into a dark room. And when it's used, the classical statement about this is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Haridas Thakur uses the example of the sun rising in the morning. That the holy name is like the sun that's below the horizon, but the dawning twilight, the sun's dawning twilight, twilight means half light, huh? The sun's dawning twilight is the abhasa. So it's like the holy name has not appeared, but because it's coming, the dawning light of the holy name is in the sky. That's what's manifest. That's what one experiences on the clearing platform. And he says, just as this dawning twilight makes the forest safe, because the dangerous elements, the thieves and the robbers, the highwaymen, they go back to their hideouts, and the wild animals go back to their dens and lairs, and of course the ghosts, the Buddhas, the Pretas, the Pistulas, they go back to where they go from, just as Dracula has to return to his coffin when the light comes. So all the evil elements, the dangerous elements of the night disappear just when the dawning light is in the sky, even before the sun is up. So similarly, this dawning twilight of the holy name destroys all sinful reactions and brings liberation, gives liberation. The pure name, the Shuddha Nam, bestows Krishna Prema. So while Namabhasa is not our aim, it's not bad, because it's the condition under which one makes, that this anartha nirvritti takes place, this appearance of this Namabhasa. And the interesting thing about the clearing platform is that one can get there pretty much by one's own desire. To go from the clearing to the pure, that is not really so much in our control. But much more in our control is to be able to go from the offensive to the clearing stage. Because we simply have to determine that we're going to become clear, free from offenses. And in the Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the offense that sort of lies at the background of all offenses is this pramadaha. It is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. The reason we say 10 offenses and then name another one is that there's different ways of counting the offenses. In the Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur lists pramadaha, or inattentiveness, as one of the offenses. See, in the quotation, I think it's from the Padma Purana, where the offenses are there. They are not numbered. And after the eighth offense, it says, api pramadaha. Even or indeed or pramadaha. So he lists that as a separate offense. And then he puts the fourth and the fifth together as one. To consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna as imagination, and therefore to make up some interpretation. He lumps those together. But in another place, those two are listed as counted as two separate offenses, and the pramadaha is not mentioned. It's not separated out. Because if you think of it, at least the way I have thought of it, now I don't have an authority for this, but you look at any offense, it's some variety of distraction. Any sense gratification is a distraction. I mean, what is a distraction? It means not thinking of Krishna. That's the material condition. So in a way, this pramadaha is the sort of all-inclusive form of being diverted from Krishna. Is pramadaha. But especially in chanting, he lists three kinds of pramadaha. And especially, he said, anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, unless you're dealing with inattentiveness, you will not be successful in becoming free from the other offenses. This is the kind of linchpin of the whole system of aparads. And this one has to be dealt with. So especially when you're chanting japa, there's the tendency. Of course, the one most of us, there's three kinds. He lists three kinds of pramadaha, which actually he takes these from this Madhurya Kandamini, really, where... there's different symptoms of not being steady, of anishtita. The first three are the three forms of pramadaha, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur: laya, which means sleep. There are those who fall asleep as soon as they pick up their beads. Vikshepa, distraction, that is thinking of other things. And apratipati, indifference or disinterest in spiritual topics. Or that is to say, when you're chanting, you're not falling asleep, you're not thinking of other things, but you're not too excited about it, not that interested in it either. You're kind of apathetic or a little bored. That's apratipati. What is it? No. Apratipati, yeah. Apratipati. These are the three that he says, these are three forms of pramadaha. So when you're chanting your japa, that's the time to be... Really, if you're chanting japa, you can't be, you know, blaspheming devotees because you're not talking to somebody else. Or you could do it in your mind. You could be distracted, thinking of other things and what you're thinking about. That idiot, you know. It's possible. But generally, the nice thing about japa is the arena is simple. As you go through the day, things are complicated. There are many actors on the stage. But during japa, there's basically three actors on the stage. There's you, there's your mind, and there's the holy name. It's simple. So you try to fix your attention on the holy name. To fix our attention is within the power of our wills. the corrigible power of our wills. We can fix our attention on the holy name. But then, then you discover suddenly you're thinking about something else. You don't know how it happened. It's like knowing how you fell asleep. You can't sort of figure out when it happened, but now you've noticed it's happened. And for some time, you don't know maybe even how long, you've been thinking of something else. As soon as you notice it, you again have to place your attention again back at the feet of the holy name. Then you are concentrating on the holy name, then the mind, you know, wanders off again, and when you notice it, you bring it back. That's the clearing stage. In the pure stage, you're concentrating on the holy name and it stays there. In fact, Vishnu Chakravarti mentions that a more elevated state of Krishna consciousness, you're doing something else, you know, so you're trying to think about how to get the car repaired. And suddenly you find you're thinking of Krishna. You keep getting distracted from your mundane concerns and thinking of Krishna. You don't know how your mind went away, went to Krishna again. So just as in this stage, you're thinking, trying to think of Krishna, and you don't know how and when your mind got diverted to something mundane. On the pure stage, the Krishna is the default position. It just always goes back there automatically, practically. You have to force yourself to think about something else.
If you're chanting the holy name and you're thinking of spiritual topics.
So when you're chanting the holy name, why not just think about after you're calling Krishna, Krishna, and why should I be thinking at the same time trying to figure out the exact meaning of chincha beta beta tatwa? So really I should be thinking about Krishna. And maybe about what I'm asking Krishna for. Please engage me in your service. Or please let me understand the chincha beta beta tatwa. That's okay too. But Krishna is an evocative case. I mean, it's better if you're distracted by a spiritual topic than if you are remembering the matrix, which is so unfortunate to see. Don't you like that part? See what happens? Can't even mention it. It's like saying, don't think of an elephant. So the idea is to fix the mind. I mean, really, this case of being really chaste to your purpose, you're chanting the holy name. It's your, you know, quality time with Krishna's names, and that's what you should do. You concentrate. It's concentration. So on the one hand, laya is there, the tendency to fall asleep. The idea is to make sure you get rest. Otherwise, when I was a ferocious temple president in my early days, I used to have this squirt bottle. And that could go reach all the way across this room, practically. And I'd make all the devotees, I'd force every devotee in the temple to be in the temple room, except the ones that were on the altar cooking during japa. During the whole morning program, actually, I didn't leave. I locked the temple room door. They couldn't get out. They all sat and chanted japa, and I had this squirt bottle. And you could pass it around and, you know, hit yourself in the face with the water on the spray setting, if you were so inclined. But otherwise, I'd watch people and they'd fall asleep. Then there's one devotee who kept falling asleep anyway. So we made him chant while standing up. And then you're chanting your japa, you're all absorbed, and all of a sudden you hear this crash as the guy falls to the floor. Then eventually he learned how to chant in his sleep. So I mean, now, you know, I would have said to him, you know, I would have made arrangements to make sure he got a few extra hours sleep. But in those days, I think we were very rigorous about, you know, 6 hours of sleep. But he obviously needed more sleep. He was in that condition. I mean, some people are sleepier than others, and they shouldn't. But anyway, you have to deal with the sleep problem. than the inattentiveness. It looks to me actually like one is inattentiveness in the mode of ignorance, that's sleep. Distraction is inattentiveness in the mode of passion. Mm-hmm. And the last is in the mode of goodness. You're concentrated, but still there's a little lack of feeling or enthusiasm for the holy name. But if you're attentive, if you're on the clearing stage, if you pay attention to the Lord, then also feelings will begin to be manifest for Krishna. I mean, feelings is not something you can actually force the way you can in some ways force your attention. But with inattention are actually the seeds of love, because actually when you're attentive, you're coming into contact with Krishna. You're in the clearing stage, then you're in contact with Krishna, and you'll respond to that, at least that dawning light. There's some proximity, some closeness to Krishna is there, and you'll begin to respond to it. And before I'd actually studied this this purport about this Durdaivam, understood the meaning of this Durdaivam, I had noticed that when I really began to try to become more attentive while chanting, that at a certain point I'd be trying to concentrate on the holy name, and I'd notice my mind would veer away from it, and that this my mind was veering away from the holy name because I was feeling uncomfortable, a kind of mental discomfort from chanting. And I thought, wow, what is this from? I thought you're supposed to feel bliss. And then I thought, well, you know, if this discomfort, this mental disquietude, that would make my mind go away from the holy name. If this comes from the holy name, then actually it must be somehow rather beneficial. And so I thought, I'll just force myself not to, even though my mental discomfort increases. And so it began to increase, and finally I recognized for what it was, and it was a kind of grief. A real sorrow. And that was because, and then I realized, why do I feel so bad? And I realized I was feeling so bad because I had turned away from Krishna. I was in this material world. I had been so many sinful for so many years. I've been chanting the holy names. And then I realized that's good to feel bad. Because it did. It felt bad, but it was a kind of healing pain. Well, this is what this is being talked about in this purport by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You feel bad about yourself with an anguished heart full of contrition. Now, people are afraid of feeling bad about themselves because they think it's low self-esteem. But it's not. It's humility. From this feeling bad about yourself comes the humility that's discussed in the next verse. What's the difference between humility and low self-esteem? People with low self-esteem, by the way, are not humble. They're very puffed up. Because they compensate for the low self-esteem by developing a huge false ego. Low self-esteem really was this sense that you're worthless and useless. But it's more than that. Really what it is, it's a feeling of being rejected by those people who are supposed to love you. I think it comes about in childhood when you know, you're not adequately loved by your mother or father or something like that. Probably people then get this sense. And, you know, sometimes they say, you're worthless, you know, you're useless. I'm sorry I ever had you. You know, and people are abusive like that, and people develop low self-esteem, but they don't know how to distinguish that from. And people with that, then they are always out to prove something, so they develop a huge false ego to show that they're really worth something. They're some kind of silent dialogue with his own judgment that they feel has been passed upon them. But the fact is that when you're chanting the holy names and you start to feel really bad about yourself for having turned away from Krishna, you can then reflect that actually I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I'm actually able to sit here and chant the holy names. Why is that? Well, it's because Lord Chaitanya has descended to give me the holy names. So actually, he cares about me. And Prabhupada, look what he went through to bring the holy names to me. And look what all the other devotees have done. All the Vaishnavas have moved heaven and earth to bring the holy names. How can I say that I'm not loved? So you have the assurance that you are loved by Krishna, that you are valued by Krishna. So this lack of a sense of self-worth should be there. If you think that I'm not valued by Krishna, then that's quite false. That's not a judgment about you, that's a judgment about Krishna. In spite of having turned away from Krishna, in spite of having come to the material world, in spite of having embarked on a criminal career in the three modes of material nature spanning billions of lifetimes, Krishna still cares about me, and he's making arrangements for me to come back to him. We should understand that. And so it's one has to regret having turned away from Krishna. This regret is the basis from which eventually it matures into strong feelings of separation. Yugayitam nivishena. That's the beginning of strong feelings of separation. So at this point, your emotional engagement is there with the holy name, and therefore you're no longer indifferent. Chanting becomes a real psychodrama, where you're really engaged in your relationship with Krishna or lack of it, and regretting the fact that this durdaivam indvishamiha janinaniraga, that you can really feel this durdaivam, you feel this, that is your misfortune, and therefore you begging the Lord to please accept me back again. A feeling that comes to the fore, the fifth of the Shishastika prayers, please pick me up, please consider me one of the motes of dust or pollen or whatever that are on your lotus feet. So that's also from the Shishastika prayers, we get the, as I said, the emotional as well as the intellectual and willing aspect of the holy name, so that this apratipati is also remedied in this way. So one has to come on this clearing platform. That's what this durdaivam, the acknowledgement. First of all, there has to be acknowledgement of my offenses and sins. Then I have to isolate them, as he says, and conscientiously try to avoid them. And that's the clearing platform. And then, if we have been a long time chanting the holy names in a lackadaisical way, that is to say, on the offensive platform, then our spiritual progress is stopped. We're not getting anywhere. And if that's gone on for some time, I begin to, and Krishna consciousness becomes a chore, I start thinking, why am I in this movement anyway? What am I doing here? Why? And I'm frustrated. I was promised happiness, bliss, all these other things joining, and now it's just this grind. And I have to put up with all these people. And of course, since I'm not experiencing any, I'm not having any interesting adventures in spiritual life, I'm looking to movies like The Matrix and other things for excitement. And going other places and sense gratification, it starts to look interesting, and I start to get irritated by all the devotees, and karmis look to be better, like much better association, and so on. And then I leave. But if I've been in that case for some time, and I begin to just try to come to the clearing stage, beginning with dealing with the offense of inattentiveness, then, you know, it's like the ice thaws, the dam breaks, the things start to move again, spiritual life quickens, I began to make spiritual progress. Everything looks better. ISKCON looks better. The devotees look better. Spiritual life becomes interesting. Material life doesn't look so attractive. The whole mentality will change if I've been stuck on this offensive platform for some time. And you can go right away. As soon as one tries to become free from offenses, you're on the clearing platform. Doesn't matter how many offenses there are, if you're trying to become free from them. For further study of what the offenses are, you can read these, the aparads and also the other anarthas, the sinful reactions and so on.
Yeah. Is it possible to be for some time on the clearing stage and go back to the offenses?
Yeah. Because you're in, and this is the stage of anartha nirvritti, so you can be on the clearing stage, and then something happens, and then you go, you move in fits and starts.
Also with the pure name?
No. Even before then, once you get to nishta, once you're in nishta, it's very rare that you can go back, but it's rare. Once you get past anartha nirvritti, you become steady in your devotional service. And that means, steady means the offenses are almost gone. They're not completely, there's still some purification to go, and still the pure name is not manifest, but it's right there. The light is very bright. See, my theory, there are different forms of namabhas. And we're talking about the namabhas that you come while you're practicing. But namabhas is there when people unintentionally chant the Lord's name, or they chant it in a joking way, or even a mocking way. The case of Ajamil, who was, say the Lord's name meaning something else. When Ajamil called his son Narayan, that was actually namabhas. Therefore, the Yamadutas couldn't take him. So my theory of what happened. See, almost everybody has this experience that when they first come to Krishna consciousness and begin chanting, they experience this great rush of spiritual advancement, and then suddenly it stops or slows down. And usually the general explanation that's given in ISKCON is that Krishna gives you some extra mercy in the beginning just to spur you on. But then after that, then that sort of mercy runs its course, hits its expiration date, and after that you have to work for it. It's not exactly wrong, but it's inaccurate. The real thing that happens is in the beginning you are chanting namabhas. Like, for example, because you're coming to ISKCON for the first time and meeting devotees, what do you think about the devotees? You think they're all great souls. And then you get to know them. And so now Vaishnava aparad becomes a real possibility. And if you're not really, really careful, because now that you're not supposed to remain a naive fool, like in the beginning, maybe you're foolish in the beginning, you lack discrimination. And certainly if you're going to advance, you're going to have to see who's good to associate with and who's maybe is better for you to keep your distance from, even though they're devotees. So you have to discriminate. Yet at the same time, you have to live with the devotees, understand who's following and who's not following properly, but at the same time not commit Vaishnava aparad. That requires like some cultivation of a certain attitude. So, in the beginning, you didn't even know who the spiritual master was or what he ordered, so you couldn't commit Guru Avarshana, disregard of the spiritual master. But after you know, and especially after you're initiated, then you disobey his order. So I think that happens in the beginning. There was this just because of newness. There was Namabhasa, and then one began committing aparads and not trying to do anything about it. If you're alert from this danger from